A new era of power has arrived with the Alienware Area 51 gaming laptops, intentionally engineered to push more power to the CPU and GPU for maximum performance. Combined with Intel Core Ultra 9 processors, merging CPU, NPU, and integrated GPU into one AI-optimized chip, it delivers fast, smart, and seamless performance across everything you do. And with the new cryo chamber design, airflow is focused exactly where it's needed most. Fused with Alienware's enhanced thermal solutions, it creates a higher power output without raising noise levels, allowing you to play with confidence even during the most demanding marathon gaming sessions. So no matter what you're playing, Alienware ensures every game runs precisely as its developers intended. A new era of power is here. All you have to do is take it. Discover Area 51 today at www.alienware.com/area-51laptops.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Retronauts Pocket. Once again, I'm Ray Barnholt. Joining me is Bob Mackey.
Hey.
On the line, Jeremy Parrish.
Hey, hey.
And returning guest from the last main episode, Justin Haywald.
Hey, hey, hey.
Whoa.
that was my Fat Albert impression.
And this week, we're directly following up from last week, something we don't do that much, but we're talking about some games of Game Center CX. Now, as we mentioned on that last show, Game Center CX is as educational as it is entertaining, I would say. It's infotainment. People have discovered lots of crazy Japanese games through the show, or in our case, we've also discovered them and seen them beyond the first level, as we've also talked about. So me and Jeremy and Bob, at least, Justin, I don't know if you want to jump in, but we did pick out one game each, one episode, essentially, of Game Center CX and the game of it. And we're just going to talk about it a little bit.
Hmm.
And I think I'll start. And I'm going to start with Atlantis No Nazo, or The Mystery of Atlantis, which was the first episode of the second season when it was they retooled it to make it only about the crazy challenges and keep Arno in the room as long as he can. So Atlantis No Nazo is a Sunsoft Famicom game from 1986. And this was back when a game with the word Nazo in it or mystery was something that was bound to upset you. And this one, Atlantis, was one of the quote-unquote highlights of this. And this was also an early Sunsoft game before their games started to get like really hi-fi, let's say, really high quality, and sort of become known as they were in America. But before they were known in America for their high-quality games, they made some dinkier sort of Famicom games before that. In this game, it's a platformer. You play an explorer apparently searching for Atlantis, and what this involves is essentially running and jumping through a series of 101 interconnected rooms, which the game calls zones, in a non-linear fashion. I mean, in some respects, this is not Metroid because you do see hard transitions between zones, and you know, you enter a door and then all of a sudden you flash and it's into the next one, and really no two zones are the same. So you really have to find a way through this vague maze of screens in the game and survive as well because the enemies are, I wouldn't say unpredictable, but they do move in a way that doesn't really complement the hero's physics, which are also very floaty and slippery. So he'll do these giant floaty jumps and all this. And you see this on the episode because Arino just has a hell of a time trying to get through it, and he's slipping off ledges and all this stuff. And it gets very maddening. And there's also lots of narrow platforms as well, so that doesn't help.
I think it's worth saying that you said, you know, you're fighting your way through 101 rooms, but this is not kind of one of those single screen early Famicom platformers, you know, like you know, door or something.
Yeah.
Each room is, you know, it can be a very fairly large scrolling space, like a contiguous space. And I guess you kind of need to understand that this game came along pretty early in the Famicom's life, and it was in that period, like right after Super Mario Brothers, where people were like, oh, platforming, that's pretty cool. We should do that.
Yeah.
Let's see. Let's try to do something different. And they would, you know, go about it all kinds of not necessarily smart ways. And a lot of early video game thinking is involved in this, where it's just like completely illogical puzzles, things that were just thrown in there to obfuscate gameplay. Because, you know, you spent money on this game, you had to spend your time to get through it.
And you see that a lot in the episode, too, where he picks up items or he's just going into a room and he has no idea what to do or what this thing he's picked up is going to do later.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another big thing, is that you can't really reach the proper ending without taking notes or having a strategy guide. Mm-hmm. Because all these rooms also will have traps in them. Traps that are sort of like warps, you know, they'll warp you in any direction because, again, this is nonlinear. You can go from, like, you know, let's say, hypothetically, like the 23rd zone to the 42nd or what have you, something like that. And then, you know, and then you need to find a warp, which will actually warp you forward, but that needs to be revealed with a certain method, like you need to go in another room first, or you need to drop a bomb at a certain spot that will suddenly summon the door out of thin air, and or jump several times on one spot. Things like that, that again, were just really sort of a weird hallmark of games of this sort of pocket of time. And then
back when obtuse and fun were the same.
Yes.
I think games like Atlantis No Nazo draw at least as much from something like Tower of Druaga as from Super Mario Brothers. You know, there's the idea of, like, you have to make it through the game and you need all these secret items to get through it, but they're hidden in non-obvious ways, and you just have to keep kind of smashing your head against the game until you figure it out, or talk to friends, or buy a strategy guide. Like, Tower of Druaga was a huge hit for Namco in the early Famicom days, and I think a lot of people were like, oh, people like this? Let's make a game like this.
Yeah, it's sort of taking that arcade philosophy and thinking that everybody would love it, but instead it's like you're just making games for kids, boys, I suppose, who just want the hardest possible challenge and want to be maddened by this for months on end. And that just happened for quite a while on Famicom. I mean, sure, there were lots of hard games after that, but this weird sort of period of time. Because also, I mean, even Mario did it, because Super Mario Bros. 2 Lost Levels came out the same year. And that is also all about being for super players. You have to get through another 32-plus levels that are super crazy.
They're all just drawing from the harder, faster, more challenging Qbert tradition. I don't know if I got that name right.
I think there really was more challenging everything.
All right. Yeah, there really was that kind of early arcade mindset of, oh, you liked this game and you think you're good, but check it out. We made it twice as hard, and not necessarily by playing fair. So F you, have a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, one of the trap rooms is just a black void where you fall and die endlessly until you get a game over. So watch out for that
Yay.
One. Be fun. That's a little bit about Atlantis No Nazo. Interesting postscript is that Activision licensed this game from Sunsoft, localized it, and intended to release it in America as Super Pitfall 2. Now, in fairness, Super Pitfall is definitely a similar game. You also play an explorer in this somewhat vague world, and it's really long and inscrutable. But they were also going to release it in 1989, and as a 1986 level quality game, probably would have been the least of the problems they would have had in trying to sell it. So they abandoned that idea. However, it was fully done, and the prototype ROM is out there now. Just look for that Super Pitfall 2 ROM if you want to try it out. And actually, they did actually tie up some loose ends of the Japanese version. They did make things not less hard, but a little bit easier to figure out. Endless Void trap room I mentioned, I think I think it leaves you with one life or something instead of just totally giving you a game over or something that just warps you backward.
Well, so, it sounds like that was probably a bug, and that was just one of those things where like, well, let's not fix that.
That can be debated. Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, no, yeah, right. It's like, yeah, no, that's good.
Those were kind of in Star Tropics, those kind of traps. Like, you wanted to go this way? Well, too bad. You didn't know you were going to die, but now you're going to die.
Yeah. So we probably dodged a bullet there. But then we got other games that were modified, you know, like Ninja Gaiden 3 or whatever, that were made harder for us or something. And so it goes both ways, I guess. But anyway.
Ray, if you had to pick, which do you think is the better game, Atlantis No Nazo or Super Pitfall?
Oh, gosh. I'm thinking, because I have played Super Pitfall, and I... I would say I don't have a sentimental feeling towards it, but I do remember, you know, trying to figure it out when I rented it a long time ago. It's definitely a rickety game, but I feel like Atlantis No Nazo was a bit better put together, even if it is really crazy and the physics are kind of weird. It still has a semblance of care put into it. Right.
Yeah,
I don't think Pitfall did.
Yeah. I would have to say Atlantis No Nazo also. I think that even I don't know if I could necessarily say that it's put together better, but I feel like it's a much more ambitious game. Like that the game tries to do a lot, and I think part of the jankiness of the game is because there's so little ROM space on those old Famicom cartridges.
Yeah.
Like, there's just so much information they can fit in there, and they tried to put 101 different stages in there with lots of hidden secrets and lots of varied enemies and interesting traps and that sort of thing. And they were doing it in, you know, like half an animated GIF's memory space. Not even that, like a, you know, like the icon on your computer desktop for your hard drive is probably about the same amount of data as they had for that entire video game.
Hmm.
So
yeah.
within those limitations, and you know, they're kind of riding the edge of game design. Like, no one really knew how to make a good exploratory platformer back then. It had never really been done before.
Yeah.
So, you know, points for trying, even if they did a really kind of terrible job.
Yeah. But anyway, that is The Mystery of Atlantis, and it is one of the better Game Series X episodes. It's one of my favorite ones, which is pretty good for it being, like, the technically the first episode where it was, like, really geared up to be about challenges. And it's also on the Retro Game Master DVD set that we mentioned last episode as well. So you can find it on there. All right, let's see. Who wants to go next? Jeremy, was it?
Yeah, I'll go next. Because I think in a lot of ways, the game that I kind of caught my interest from watching the Game Center or Retro Game Master DVDs is in a sense, sort of the successor to Atlantis No Nazo. It's, Medulla no Tsubasa, or The Wing of Medulla.
Yeah.
And that's also by Sunsoft. Came out about a year after Atlantis No Nazo.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like what they tried to do was take the various ambitions they had with Atlantis No Nazo and refine them a lot. You know, it has fewer levels. The levels are much bigger. There's much less randomness and arbitrariness to how you discover things. It's much more of kind of a prototypical action-adventure platformer type game. It's also interesting because it might be the first Famicom action game to star a female protagonist. I could be wrong about that, but it was kind of unusual that you had, you know, like sort of your classic 80s anime girl as the protagonist instead of some dude.
That's right.
So, you know, it gets points for that. But yeah, I watched the Medulla episode and was really fascinated by this game because it's kind of this, it's a really sincere effort by Sunsoft to step into the same space as games like Metroid and The Goonies 2 and Castlevania 2 and Zelda 2. A lot of sequels there. I guess if you look at this as Atlantis No Nazo 2, it kind of works along those same lines.
Yeah,
I don't know. Have you ever played it, Ray, or anyone else?
I did not. No, I don't remember playing it too seriously. But
I have not.
Of course, I've seen the episode, and yeah, I did get that sense as well. So it was relatively more polished than Atlantis was, and it does have more cohesion to it. Yeah.
Yeah, it has a different theme. Instead of being like you know, an Indiana Jones kind of adventure with some sort of hapless adventure archaeologist, it's more of a classic high fantasy sword and sorcery type thing. The character you play as, Lucia, starts out with a sword that's really pathetically weak. And as you play through the levels, you'll find these doors that you can go into, and inside the doors there are just different power-ups that you collect. And it's one of those games that we mentioned in last episode where to continue, you don't just press continue. It takes you back to the title screen whenever you die, which can be really frustrating. But if you hold down select, then press start, then you'll be able to choose which level you begin from.
Yeah.
And depending on the level you begin from, it actually carries through the equipment that you had when you started that level. So even though you're sent back to the beginning of the game, if you use the secret, I don't even know why it's secret, why they couldn't just put it out there because it exists in the game. But if you use the secret continue code, then you don't have to start from the beginning. You can start from the most recent level, fully powered up with all your new weapons and magic spells and things like that. But you know, it has kind of a very limited inventory system. Lucia starts out, like I said, with just a sword, but she gathers magic, she gets power-ups, and you can pause the game and then cycle through to change her weapons. So I don't know, like, it has some problems. The physics are really floaty and weird, and, enemies attack you constantly from all directions, and there's no real mercy invincibility when you get hit. Like, you get hit and you just keep taking damage. So your life meter starts at 1,000, but it runs down really fast. And, as Arno discovered in the episode, it's really easy to exploit a lot of the bosses. There's one spell you get where, it just sends out fireballs, in a vertical spray above and below your character. And, you can stand on ledges above bosses and just spam that and destroy them without ever having to worry about losing any health on your own. So, you know, it's really rough in a lot of ways, but it has charm. Like, the music's pretty good. The graphics are pretty solid for their time. And again, like Atlantis and Nanazo, it was a really ambitious game for the time that didn't necessarily work, but you could see that. I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's the same team as Atlantis Nonazo, but, you know, coming from the same developer, you can, like, see them starting to puzzle out what makes a good video game, what's fair, what is, you know, what will be enjoyable for people to do. And this one didn't quite hit it, but they were getting closer. And, you know, eventually Sunsoft would create a very similar sort of spiritual successor to this in Blaster Master a few years later. And that was a much, much better game. Still a little unfair, but a greatly refined game. So you kind of see them kicking around this problem and slowly getting there until they finally create a classic.
Yeah. I like how you put that too, how they were just trying to puzzle things out and figure things out as they were going along, and eventually you learn from your mistakes. And what do you know? The ugly duckling becomes a lovely swan.
Yeah, I mean, Medulla is one of those games that I would like to tackle sometime for Anatomy of Games. Maybe when I'm feeling kind of adventurous, because there is some interesting stuff going on there, but at the same time, it's also kind of a mess and really unfriendly and unfair. I think it would be an interesting case study, like, to compare that to something sort of contemporary like Metroid or Goonies 2 and say, like, why do those games work in places where this one doesn't?
Yeah, right. So would you recommend it in more of a historical sense? Or do you think people should try it out?
I guess if you have an interest in the style of game and the Metroidvania style of game and are just kind of curious about how those things sort of shaped up, I do think that's one of those games that you need to look at. It's probably more of a historical footnote than anything else, but it's still kind of interesting, kind of valuable. You know, I'd put it maybe in the same category as Deadly Towers, which is... you know, a game that tries a lot and is too opaque and too difficult to be really fair and doesn't really have the controls and refinement that it needs to work. But by God, there was a lot of ambition behind it. Like, they really, they were not content just to make a puzzle, you know, platformer or a maze chase Pac-Man clone or something, or even just like a Super Mario Brothers ripoff like Adventure Island. Like, they wanted to do more. They wanted to bring RPG elements into the genre, and they did a really crappy job of it. But, you know, they made the effort, and that's kind of commendable. You have to have those halting first steps taken in order to advance.
That is very true. Very true. Do either of you guys watch that episode at least? Or?
I haven't seen it, no.
Okay.
Yep.
That's fine.
I will now.
I don't quite remember
Justin?
That one. I do not remember that episode. I might have seen it back a long time ago.
So it's the one where he keeps forgetting to hold down select whenever he continues.
Right. Yeah.
And eventually they like write it down for him and he still forgets. So then every time he dies, the assistant director like shouts out, holds down select. Yeah. And he has to like go through this ritualized process where he calls back like, hold down select, press start. And then he finally beats it when he remembers, oh, right, I have to hit select.
That's the part that stood out for me.
Yeah. Great. Well, I guess, Bob, you want to go next?
Sure. The one I chose is Layla, possibly based on the Eric Clapton song, more likely based on Dirty Pair, because it looks identical to Dirty Pair, and it came out maybe like a year after the anime aired.
That makes a lot of sense.
Finally, a game that answers the question, what do you do when you get lonely?
You don't play Layla because you might kill yourself.
Yeah.
Like Ray's Choice, mine is also from 1986, and it is a very 1986 Famicom game. It's a blisteringly hard sort of run-and-gun shooter where it follows the same rule of like Ninja Turtles and maybe like Ghostbusters 2 for the NES, where enemies are just like random things just flying around the screen at will with no like rhyme or reason at all. Yeah. And basically everything is going to kill you in this game. And there are only 8 stages. He gets through 5 before giving up. It's one of those games where they go past the time they're allotted. I think it's like 12:10 when he wraps up and just like, that's enough. But yeah, it's a really hard like shooting game. And it's sort of like I guess you can compare it to Contra, but not really if you want to think about how it plays. But there's 2 parts of every stage. One is a just regular like sort of outdoorsy outer space level, and then you go onto the next level, which is a base. And those are where all the mazes are. So it has all of your BS Famicom maze stuff mixed in there where everything looks the same. So you basically have to write down like what entrances you go into, what exits you leave from, things like that. But there's more to this than that, though. You can continue, but you need to find the continue token in every stage before it'll give you a continue password, you know, when you die. And then the passwords are like 25 characters long, and all they do is just bring you back to the beginning of the stage. There's like not a lot of information contained in that 30 characters
great.
Or whatever. But there's a few other things. Like it is not helped in the way that when you get down to a certain amount of health, and I know like this is annoying in modern games too, like Zelda, where there'll be like a little beeping or whatever when you're down to 1 health or whatever, like there are 1 heart. Well, in this game, everything that's black will flash red. That includes the entire background. So there's that part of it too. Yeah, I mean, it just like it does not help you in any way. And there's another thing too about the game where I think they sort of were thinking about it from a more arcade-based like context, where if you stay in one area too long, this like tornado comes from nowhere and kills you. And it is possible because you can't scroll backwards. It's possible to get stuck in an area you can't jump out of, and you just have to wait for death because there's no other way out of it. I think that was their solution. Like, oh, this character can get stuck here. I'll just kill him. You know, that'll be the way out of this scenario. But
That sounds like a fix. That's a solution to a problem that they had.
Yeah. Not a good solution, but. Yeah, and it is not a remarkable game, but I just find I really like the very difficult games because it does show off his lack of pattern recognition. He has a real problem with that, especially with the bosses. And
it does look a lot like Wing of Medulla.
It does, and it has the same kind of heroine figure, I guess.
The character sprite's almost the same.
Yeah, and I feel like we could have gotten this game. It could have been remembered in the same like. In the same way that we remember like things like Athena and things like that, or like Chubby Cherub or whatever, because it seems like it's kind of torn from that same era. But yeah, Layla, I don't know if you guys have any questions about it, but it's worth watching the episode.
Yeah. Did you actually play it?
I didn't play it, no. I had to run as soon as I finished the episode. But it is it's hell, and like I said, he doesn't finish it. And we do see the ending, though, where she's like, I should go on a diet because all of the power-ups you pick up in the game are just ice cream and cakes. So,
yeah, not the most sensitive thing, especially when, you know, the front label of it. Like you said, very Dirty Pair-ish.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Cute anime girls with guns. Yep. All you need to know. All right. So, Layla, yeah. Now, Justin, did you have anything?
So, we mentioned this earlier. I was a little... curious. So mine would have been Takeshi no Chosenjo, Takeshi's Written Challenge. Because that's one that just stands out for me, apart from all of the regular games that come out of the US.
Yes, and it definitely has a reputation beyond Game Center CX.
This is a game that I can't imagine anyone was asking for a localization for, but you said that people have been working on it, and it's actually now playable in some form.
Yeah, there's an English
US.
Patch,
What? Have you played it? Did you try it out?
No, but I've seen little... walkthroughs of it.
To be fair, though, there isn't really that much text in the game, is there?
No,
I didn't think so. I've seen playthroughs of it, like in Japanese, but
it's very obscure. So Takeshi no Chosenjo is a game made by written with Beat Takeshi, comedian over in Japan. It was published by Taito, I think, also in 1986. But it was a game where I think he was saying basically, you need to play this not like a regular game. This is not a game that you can approach with the skills that you've learned as a gamer. He wants to just have you think about this in a different – to put it politely, to think about it in a different way.
Yeah.
But in actuality, just to completely wreck your mind. So, like, there is one part in a game where I think you have a conversation with someone in a bar, and you literally have to put down the controller and not touch anything for over an hour, but then pick it up within right after that hour and, like,
something
push a button.
Like that, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of it's based in a reality.
Yes.
I mean, it starts off with you basically just quitting your job because you're just some you're some guy fed up with your job or something like that. Or then you're given this this severance essentially, and then you just go around and
go drinking. You
Beat
up a mob boss, get some money, and spend it at the pachinko parlor.
You go home to your broken home, and your wife is yelling at you, and the kids are bouncing around. You're just like, screw this. I'm going to go do something else. And then you go to the bars, and you go to the karaoke, and you go to the pachinko parlors. And it's all – it basically just sort of coalesces in this cross like this international treasure hunt. Like you find out about this special treasure, and then you go fly out to this exotic island to go search for this treasure. So it's basically it's essentially those two halves, not exactly halves, but it's like that. And of course, you have to do everything in a certain pattern, and there are these weird sort of semi-realistic things, like having to set down the controller for quite a while. And
there's one where you sing karaoke, like the Famicom had a built-in microphone then, and you go into a karaoke bar and it rates you. You have to sing along as a karaoke song's playing, and it tells you. And I remember Arino doing this and messing up a couple times because you have to get a good rating.
Yeah.
In this very, very like a microphone that's obviously not actually going to pick up anything that you're doing very well.
No, it just picks up tone.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think they're all Enka songs, like. Kind of more traditional Japanese, not like a fun pop song. These, things that you would know if you're probably a big fan of BTS.
Back in the doldrums of karaoke, for sure.
So it's not something I think that you were meant to beat necessarily. It was more a game that's a practical joke on you.
Yeah,
and if you beat it eventually, you got a game over screen that was the end. There were so many. Like, I think one of the other parts of the game is that there are so many ways to fail. Like there was something in the beginning. In the beginning menu where it's like punch the – like you can start, continue, punch the old man. If you pick punch the old man, then it's game over.
Yeah. And you instantly die and the game over screen is a shot of your funeral.
Yeah.
But you basically play as this brazen asshole throughout the entire thing. And it's all about just like I guess it's sort of a commentary on leaving your life behind and finding greater fortune. But you also have to play through this rather difficult game. So, I mean, yeah, you go through the town and you basically just cast off everything. But then you have to play this shooting section where you're, I think, hang gliding to the exotic island. Mm-hmm. And it's this shoot 'em up section that's also pretty hard or at least, you know, at first hard to figure out.
But if you go too early, like you can hang glide to the red island or something like that where you can't get there. Like that's basically you either crash into the ground or crash into a mountain and you lose.
Yes.
And that's game over.
Yeah.
But you can punch everybody. You can just punch everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Precursor to GTA.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of Who Framed Roger Rabbit for the NES in that way, where Eddie Valiant can just punch everyone in the streets.
Men. I think another way to win the game is just to like throw 35,000 punches in the beginning. And if you do that, then you also win.
Wow.
Right. But the ending is pretty anticlimactic. I mean, yeah, you can, I guess, find the treasure or whatnot. But then the ending scene is like a caricature of Beat Takeshi's head just going, well, yeah, you did it.
That's good job.
It. Yep.
And if you leave it on too long, it's like it says something like, why are you taking this so seriously?
Yeah. Why'd you spend all this time? And apparently they did publish a strategy guide, but that was incomplete because apparently even the strategy guide writers could not figure it out. So they had to release like a second volume.
Wow.
Something like that. Yeah. Something like that. So, yeah, that's what you hear about a lot as far as like infamous Japanese games. And some people get the details a bit wrong, and I'm sure we did a little bit here as well. But now that there's an English patch, like you can find little walkthroughs and things and play it for yourself because there is like this – path of tasks you need to do in a very certain way to get through. Like you have to go here first and then you have to divorce your wife and stuff. And yeah.
But it's not like it makes it clear that's what you need.
Yeah,
you just have to figure it out by trial and error.
Exactly, exactly. And then not die, essentially. And but it also has this really weird sort of you can't really tell if it's purposefully buggy or what, because like in that first scene in the game, you like punch your boss, but he like just goes through the desk, and that was sort of like this weird memorable thing for people. Mm-hmm. It's like it doesn't make any sense, but why would he even move or anything? So it's kind of – it is – it's kind of a delinquent game in that sense. It's really not something that you can really trust, and you see that like from the get-go, and you just have to like go with it essentially. And so, yeah, I'm sure it made a lot of kids cry. Beat Takeshi was never forgiven. he wasn't involved in too many games after that.
Surprisingly.
Yeah.
I think probably the closest analog for us would have been the unreleased Penn & Teller game.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, I was trying to think of an analog, but yeah.
Right, yeah. Again, Prankster is just trying to make a pranky game.
A game that's not like a normal game. Something just to mess with you, basically.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good episode. That was, like we said before, the very first episode, but he also Arino also challenged it live years later in a two-hour live special, so you can watch him play through it if you really want. I think that was fan-subbed. I don't remember offhand, but I think it should be or something like that. Maybe a highlight reel. That's it. Those are the games we wanted to talk about. Those are the games that intrigued us during our time viewing Game Center CX. And, of course, if you haven't yet, go ahead and listen to that main episode of Game Center CX, and we'll tell you many, many reasons why you should watch it. And, yeah, that's it. That does it for our Pocket episode this week. Thanks,
actually,
Justin.
One really quick footnote. By a strange coincidence, the games that Bob and I picked were released 2 days apart in Japan. December 18th, 1986 for Mia Medulla, and then December 20th, 1986 for Layla.
Oh,
that's crazy. And they're so similar.
There's just something about 1986, man.
It's also crazy the games were released in December back then.
Yeah.
As opposed to the dead period that is here.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty common in Japan, actually, because that's kind of a holiday popular time, and also a chance for publishers to make book at the last minute in the year and bump up their numbers.
Yeah, because Japanese are big on Christmas, but maybe they don't take it quite as seriously. Like, they're more about the New Year holiday. More like, so, yeah. To have things released, like, the day after Christmas is not that uncommon. So, Justin, thanks again for joining us.
No, thanks for having me on.
And, so this does mark the last Retronauts of this season, this year that you people helped us kickstart, and we thank you, of course, for all that.
Are you going to keep the dream alive?
That has been the question, isn't it? That has been the question left here on the table by so many people ever, like way before we even ended. It's like, what are you going to do next? What are you going to do next? So I think we can talk about that a little bit here. First of all, I want to say I think this is going to be my last Retronauts as a host for a little bit.
Aww.
Just because, you know, I have other commitments in my life, and it's been a little bit hard to schedule things on Retronauts, and, you know, I have some other ideas for personal projects that I would want to get geared up. That's basically it. But I'm still on the board of directors, so to speak, and so, you know, if I'm needed to be a guest on the show, I certainly will be, and who knows, maybe I'll muscle in and just say, hey, I want to host this, let me host this. But that's essentially it. So that's where I'm going to end up. However, like I said, I'm still here in a supporting role, and we are going to go ahead and try and fund another season of this show. And we are using Patreon to do that this time.
Because that's what everyone does now.
Of course.
Yeah, we want to be cool like you kids.
Yeah.
Before we talk about that, though, I think it's important to talk about the fact that we haven't fulfilled all of our Kickstarter obligations, and we recognize that fact, and we're still working on those things, and we don't expect people to give us more money, just take it on faith that we're going to get stuff done. Like, we're going to be taking a bit of a hiatus now, from recording episodes. I think we'll be back in October. And in the downtime between the seasons, we're really committed to getting as many of those side projects, those commitments taken care of as possible. The DVD, the artwork, the book, things like that. It's something we don't take lightly and we are committed to. And we have been, you know, we have set money aside to make sure those things can be paid for and mailed out. So please, be confident that you will see those things in pretty short order this fall, definitely.
And our priority has been the podcast, and it takes a lot of work. So that's not an excuse or anything, but you can consider our Kickstarter like a reverse Kickstarter. You got the product first, like almost immediately, and then the goodies will come later. So right. Yeah.
Yeah, and it should be noted that when we started this the Kickstarter for this, I had a different job with fewer responsibilities. Bob and Ray were out of work and, you know, kind of freelancing, and we all lived in San Francisco or the Bay Area, and none of those things are true anymore. And, you know, managing the logistics with massive life changes that have happened in the time that we've been doing this has been really, really difficult. So I feel bad that we haven't, you know, gotten all of the Kickstarter rewards mailed out and taken care of. And it's not a lack of caring or commitment or even, you know, attention to the fact that those things need to be done on our part. It's just been doing the podcast has been a lot harder than it was at first just because of all the things that have changed outside of our expectations. So this is you know, the next few weeks, next couple of months are a chance for us to get all those things in order.
Yeah, at no point did we ever empty your money on a bed and roll around in it. Although we could have. There was a lot of it.
Sure. But yeah, I mean, yeah, we don't feel great about it, but we're trying here. And the details of what we're going to do are not completely hammered out yet, but I think we can say that based on what Jeremy just said and what we were saying is that we're going to go with something that's more focused on just getting a podcast out there.
Way that Patreon works is like you can fund people to produce that specific episode, but then there are also, I think, stretch goals in some way for that as well. But you're not going to really be going for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and we may not do such extravagant rewards this time around, but that's what I like about Patreon is that it's ongoing, and by extension, it's scalable. So we can change things around at will if we really want to or whatever happens. It's not like Kickstarter where we all have to do it in one big lump and then, you know, go forward from there. So I think that's sort of what you'll expect in the coming weeks, I think.
Yeah, I think also it helps that a lot of the big material expenses we had with the Kickstarter no longer exist. They're taken care of. We have equipment and things like that.
Although we do need a new mixer now.
Yeah.
One of the mic ports is broken.
But I mean, that's kind of small in the grand scale of we had to buy a lot of stuff to get this podcast going and up to steam.
I mean, we started in a vault and we're still in the vault, but when we started in it, it was very, very rickety. The floor was lined with paper. Now there's an actual carpet here. We bought soundproofing blankets, so now the room sounds a bit better. It's still not super professional voiceover quality, but I think the audio quality of the show here in the studio has improved a bit.
I think so, yeah.
That's good, and that was, you know, based on things that we actually managed to research and buy because of the generous funds that we were given.
Yeah. So,
and we can certainly continue that. But again, like I said, we're just going to focus on, again, just getting a podcast out there while finishing up the Kickstarter stuff, and then who knows? Maybe we'll see what happens from there. But yeah, look for all the full details in a few weeks after this show, and you can find out from there. It will be on Patreon. And of course, please follow us on Twitter as Retronauts, and on Retronauts.com. You will find news updates there. We will link the hell out of it. We will bug you incessantly about this Patreon. Don't worry. You'll find out all about
it. Yeah, and there's still the backer shout-out episode that we need to record. So
yes.
I think there will be some stuff showing up in the feed between now and the end of the hiatus.
Do not unsubscribe from our feed, please.
Yes, exactly.
Unless you want to unsubscribe and then resubscribe en masse, and maybe that'll like bump us up to the top of iTunes.
But we can finally knock off all those Garnet Lee podcasts.
Yeah, exactly.
No one will ever unsee Garnet Lee.
I do want to say thank you to everybody, though. I've really enjoyed this whole year, even though it's been a lot of work. And my favorite part of any week is Monday when I read comments and message board threads and things like that. Even if they're not always nice, I do enjoy feedback because we don't personally make money from this. So that's like the currency I traffic in is like comments and whatnot.
Good feelings, yeah. I would like in the future for us to actually make some money off of this. I'm not afraid to say that.
That would be nice.
I think it's okay for us to put in a lot of time and actually get something out of it. But I have to say that this season of Retronauts has really reinvigorated my enjoyment of podcasting. It's always something that was kind of like a burden and a frustration to me in the past. And I don't know, I've enjoyed it. Maybe it's because it's not even because it's optional. Like, it was always optional at 1UP. We didn't have to do the podcast, but I've enjoyed it, even though it's been stressful and the logistics have sometimes been really difficult with me having relocated across the country. like, I've had a good time. So I appreciate everyone who made this possible. Yeah. Thank you.
And speaking for the fans, thanks to you guys for keeping it alive. I know this is probably one of the most beloved podcasts from the old 1UP days, and it definitely fills a niche that not a lot of other programs out there do. Hmm. So I think the fans really, really love that.
It's pretty much the only survivor, really. It's the only 1UP podcast that still has its same name.
Yeah.
And that's always crazy. And, you know, people kept the old archives going one way or another. People have been putting it on cloud drives and whatnot. They should put on archive.org and just keep it in a more permanent place, but that's not needed.
Yeah, I think IGN wants to keep it going, but I don't know if they are entirely clear on the logistics of where stuff was stored. But I'm actually in contact with Per Schneider, the VIP at IGN, to make sure, like, if we can figure out a way to keep the stuff online on IGN servers. So hopefully, I don't think they're up now, but hopefully we can get all the old episodes up and running and kind of permanently archived on the internet. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Either way, I've saved all the ones I've hosted. So.
Me too.
And I've been on.
So I'm covered.
We're good as far as ego is concerned.
Yeah.
So don't worry about that. All right. Any other comments, guys?
Like, stay tuned. We got great stuff in plan for you guys, so...
It's been a good year and change.
And we will revisit old topics because it's been a long time. Some of you are new and we've grown and different things have happened. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's still like at least 15 other Castlevania games for me to talk about.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, I think I've talked about everything. Let's see. Games Center CX. I did a whole magazine about those summer games. I don't know how to do it in podcast. No, but I mean, even though...
Oh, yeah, there was... There are still a few backer episodes that we haven't done. Those will happen in the next season.
Oh, for sure, yes. We haven't forgotten.
I think there's like 4 episodes left that we haven't done yet.
Well, a couple people still need to actually reply to our emails.
Yes.
Well, are people going to be able to watch you guys play games in the interim? Playing some maybe classic games, maybe wearing a Games Center CX uniform.
I'm sure we'll have streams, so pay attention to our live, our social media stuff, and we'll let you know when that happens. And they're all archived too.
Yeah, I just invested in an RGB modded Super NES and a Frame Meister, and someone gave me the Frame Meister, which was very nice of them. So I want to like make use of this thing. So I'm probably going to stream a lot of Super NES and Super Game Boy games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because by God, I can.
Yeah, so that's definitely on the docket, or should be anyway. But yeah, and even though I won't be around, you know, I have done some great episodes here that I really enjoyed. Thanks to our guests and just you guys also just contributing and people who helped out a lot. And so yeah.
Well, Ray, thanks for participating, and we'll keep dragging you into this,
yes.
Whether you like it or not.
Can't escape, Ray.
Uh-huh. All right, so. That does it for us for this season. Of course, thank you, everybody, for listening and liking us. I would say keep watching the skies, let's say, and may Arino smile over you. Or something of that.
That's
name.
Creepy.
All right. Thank you, and good night.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.